Now, it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Or you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So, by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right. Welcome back, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It's hour two, Toker Talk Radio, on the air here live on CannabisRadio.com. And a quick programming note, Stoner Jesus won't be on the air tonight. Got some internet difficulties in Stoner Heaven. Yeah, it's surprising, actually, that Stoner Heaven is still struggling with broadband. Stoner Heaven still has a lot of dial-up accounts. God's not too quick on the whole technology thing. So no Stoner Jesus coming after today's show. You just get me. So let's wind up the rest of this Friday. And we'll do so with, coming up in the next couple of segments, I've got more recordings from the congressional testimony to the Senate Homeland Security Committee. Ethan Nadelman did a fantastic 8-minute speech, and then we'll hear from a couple of the other prohibitionists, and we'll have our finger on the pause button, because I'm sure I'll have to rebut some of their reefer madness. And you know what we ought to do one of these days here at the Russ Belleville Show? I think we ought to print up prohibitionist bingo cards. And we could have these prohibitionist bingo cards that have things on them like WOTC, what about the children? Smoff, Stone Mayhem on the freeways. Potency, not your father's Woodstock weed, right? We'd have that one. Have all these squares filled in with all the different things that they say. Because it's so routine now. You know, you can predict what they're going to say. And we'll put Kevin Sabet's face in the middle. That's your free spot. That's your free bingo spot, right? So anytime you watch one of these testimonials or you read an article, you can just have your bingo card in front of you and just mark them off as they say them. It could be a learning tool. You know, we could have the bingo card and then on the reverse have all the debunks of each one of the things. I have to put that together. I'm telling you, folks, there's going to be all sorts of great new stuff in the Radical Russ world. I'm telling you, I can't tell you everything that's happening, but there's some things happening behind the scenes and some new alliances being forged and new companies being built and new ideas being thought up. And I think it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. I trust me. It's going to be huge. speaking of the Trumpkin, did you see that thing on the internet the other day? It was on Facebook. Came through my Facebook feed of the eighth grader doing the presidential impersonations. Oh, if you haven't seen that, go look at it. Just you could probably Google it, eighth grader presidential impersonations, and find it. They played a couple of clips on some of the news shows and such, but go watch the whole 8-minute speech. The kid's amazing. He's great. What a fantastic Hillary Clinton impersonation he did. It was damn impressive. Anyway, that's going on. We've got this testimony that we're going to tell you about. And then we'll also wind things up with just the late news update, some late news Friday stories that are coming across the wire here in the world of marijuana reform. And also got some new writing gigs. You can check out, I'll have a piece coming out in the August issue of Cannabis Now magazine. and it's going to be the top five fallacies of stoners against legalization. So that'll be out on newsstands leading up to the election in California. So really excited about that. Also, more pieces, High Times magazine piece coming up for the, I think it's going to be in the October issue, which is a preview, an election preview with all the different initiatives. So plenty of that stuff coming up. And as always, you can find my writing on RadicalRust.com, the home of the Russ Belville Show. Also, let me know if you're a VIP, if you've been donating to the show for a long time and you never got your pin or sticker or anything like that, please let me know. I've had so many upheavals in my life. I've lost track of some stuff, and I want to make sure we do right by you. So just email me, radicalrust@gmail.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belville Show.
Good day, everybody. Radical Russ here in Aspen, Colorado at the Alaska Northwest Cannabis Classic, at the 26th annual Boston Freedom Rally, at the High Times Cannabis Cup Northern California, day one of CannaCon in Seattle, Washington.
It's the Russ Belville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nine after the hour, and quick update on American ignorance. Like we need one, but here's a quick update. The internet is ablaze with the news of a county in Alabama, Baldwin County, Alabama, that refuses to lower the flags to half staff for the victims of the Orlando massacre. That's right. President Obama issued a decree to lower flags to half staff nationwide. Alabama Governor Robert Bentley followed suit and ordered flags statewide to be lowered to half staff. But Baldwin County Commissioner Tucker Dorsey won't lower the flag in Baldwin County. Now, his reasoning is, and he says, quote, "My heart certainly goes out to the victims and their families, but this incident doesn't meet the test of the reason for the flag to be lowered." Oh, really? Massacring 49 people isn't enough to lower a flag. Well, he's getting pedantic about it because he cites the U.S. flag code. He cites the U.S. flag code saying that the flag is supposed to be lowered on Memorial Day. He says lowering of flags to half staff after mass shooting or terrorist event is not a valid circumstance or memorial as specified in the U.S. Flag Code, Section 175, Paragraph M. I realize that the President and Governor make this order, but I believe and interpret their order inconsistent with the adopted Flag Code. Okay, so, okay, so if you want to be pedantic about it and you want to cite the U.S. Flag Code, then I certainly hope, Tucker Dorsey, that you don't have a U.S. flag sticker on the back of your car. I hope that you're not wearing a U.S. flag pin. I hope that you don't have a t-shirt or a hat that has the U.S. flag on it. Because those items, in a strictly interpreted U.S. flag code, violate the code as well. You ever see these guys? You'll see them sometimes driving around in their big old pickup, and they got a full-size U.S. flag posted out the back of their pickup, flying like a tail on a kite, you know, behind them. They're violating the flag code. According to U.S. flag code, the only place a flag may be placed on a moving vehicle is the front left corner. Because the flag doesn't follow the vehicle follows the flag. So I have no way of looking up Tucker Dorsey's, you know, car to see if he's got a bumper sticker or if he's one of them guys that's always wearing a flag pin and such. So maybe he is consistent. Maybe he's one of these guys that follows the flag code to the letter. But I have to ask, to what purpose does this guy, I mean, like, what does he think he's defending by doing this? What does he think he's doing? Right? It's not as if, you know, the flags were ordered at half staff to celebrate the killer, right? Now that would be evil and terrible. Yeah, that would make no sense. They were ordered lowered at half staff to symbolize national mourning. And let's say that he's right and that isn't a valid reason to lower the flag. But by standing up for the flag code, what are you doing? Like protecting the flag from being disrespected? Like it's disrespected somehow if we lower it for 49 people that are slaughtered in a nightclub? What? So I just had to comment on that just because it just caught me off guard when I was clicking through tabs on the internet and I was like, what? You wouldn't lower the flag? Now, he says also, this Tucker guy says they didn't lower the flag for the massacre in Paris. They didn't lower the flag for the shootings in San Bernardino and so forth. I don't know, man. It seems a little pedantic to me. All right, let's go to the marijuana movement here because we have some more of this audio from the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, a Senate committee, where Dr. Ethan Nadelman gave some testimony regarding the legalization of marijuana and the end of marijuana prohibition. So we're going to continue now and hear from some of the anti people. David W. Murray is testifying. He's the senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. Let's take a listen.
Supply reduction in the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. He's currently senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. Dr. Murray.
Thank you, Senator. And I certainly want to take a moment to give my appreciation for each of you who is persisting in this issue and this problem. It is an urgent issue, and it does not get the attention it deserves. And I want to commend you senators who have persisted in careful attention to this issue and are probing for answers for what is, as you identified, the cause of 47,000 deaths of Americans a year and overwhelming morbidity that is an additional toll. My perspective for having worked inside the government and looking at the biomedical literature is that we need to approach drug policy somewhat differently than we have most recently, but that it can work, that we can save lives, and that we can effectively transition people into more secure and better lives. The underlying role of substance abuse, of drug use in driving American pathologies is extraordinary. I'm homeless.
Well, okay. Okay, but aren't we talking about marijuana? There's no pathology to marijuana. People don't die from marijuana. But it's instructive, though, it's illustrative, that the prohibitionists, whenever they start their testimony on something having to do with marijuana have to jump right to drugs. And it lets you know that they don't have anything scary to tell us about marijuana. It's also whenever one of these guys goes off with the gateway theory, I kind of grin a little when they start talking about the gateway theory, because it tells me they can't scare us with weed. They have to scare us with what weed might lead to. They have to use the gateway theory because they're bankrupt on any other harms that have to do with marijuana.
To domestic violence, to law enforcement difficulties, to national security risks, to educational failure, to the death of our beloved fellow citizens and family members. This is an extraordinary cancer that has been eating at us for a long time. You will hear arguments, and have heard some of them already, that I will be probably an outlier, a resistor with regard to certain of the claims. It's not so much I don't share the goals of lower drug use, of a safer, healthier society. It's that I'm not convinced that the evidence is as strong as it is sometimes portrayed. For these methodologies that are sometimes referred to as harm reduction, there are claims made about impact that when you look more carefully, the evidence is actually very weak and relies on self-report, on methodological studies that are very difficult to validate, very difficult to see the actual replicability of them. The evidence is much weaker than you might anticipate with regard to moving in the direction that has been counseled. Number two, I would point out that we have moved in this direction in the last 7.5 years under this administration. That is a direction that has not strongly applied the strategic lessons of a balanced drug strategy approach, that has weakened and undermined the very office responsible for setting that strategy, and that has moved us down a pathway that approaches harm reduction mentalities. It has led to the enabling of legal marijuana. It has led to discussions about distribution of harm reduction activities, including supervised injection facilities. And I think we can say that the results that we are seeing are before us and are really quite appalling. The result.
Yeah, those appalling results, like, you know, $121 million in tax revenues that have gone to build schools and create scholarships, the, you know, billion-dollar industry that's created tens of thousands of jobs and contributed to increased tourism in Colorado, the 63% reduction in all marijuana charges in Washington, and 80% reduction in all charges in Colorado, and the attendant criminal justice savings that we've achieved through those. Yeah, it's so appalling. Gosh, it's just terribly appalling what marijuana legalization has done. And the other side of this, to attack the other drug side, he says things like the supervised injection sites, the clean needle exchanges, have been appalling. No, they haven't. Every measure taken of every one of these that's ever been done has shown that it reduces overdose death, it reduces Hep C and HIV transmission, and does not in any way increase drug addiction. It's remarkable to me the alternate reality these people live in. And he keeps alluding to this idea that, well, the evidence isn't nearly as clear as you'd believe it to be, and it's really, you know, it's really doubtful when you look really deeply into it. Yeah, when you ignore what's right there in front of your face and for moral reasons look deeper into it to try to find some catch, some loophole, some weird outlier, like these guys that will jump on the fact that, oh my God, we found more people in car wrecks that have THC in their system. Of course, we don't know if they were high at the time. We don't count whether or not they were drivers or passengers at the time. We don't count whether or not their car was at fault in the accident or they just got hit in the accident. We just, oh no, more pot, therefore bad. This is what they've got to come to grips with, is that the use of marijuana and the increased use of marijuana in a legal framework by adults isn't a bad thing, and overall may be a net good as those adults drink less, as those adults take less Ambien and Xanax and Tylenol and all these other drugs that they're taking, like candy, taking the pill to help the pill that fixes the side effect from the other pill. This could be a net good.
Boot to the head.
Ow, you bullied me.
Ah, yes, boot to the head. The ancient art of Taekwon Leap. If you've never heard that comedy skit, go Google it. Taekwon Leap or boot to the head. You'll find it. It's hilarious. Anyway, it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone, and I have a safety meeting that I'm late for. We all want to be safe. I hope you're safe. Get to your safety meeting. We'll be back here in a couple minutes.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
Play as Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
What the hell are we paying you for?
Are you stupid?
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest-growing business association in the fastest-growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Thanks, Dan. Welcome back, everyone. 24 after the hour. We're continuing to listen to testimony at the Senate Homeland Security Committee. And Ethan Nadelman testified earlier. Right now, we're in the middle of testimony from David W. Murray. He's a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, who's not so sanguine on all this marijuana reform, legalization, and drug harm reduction. My apologies. In the earlier segment, people in the chat room were telling me it got really quiet. And yeah, I'm trying to boost the sound on this particular recording, and it's not very loud. So I'll try and turn this up as much as I can and make sure you're able to hear it. But we return to the testimony from the gentleman from the Hudson Institute.
Results are disaster, epidemic, and tragedy. Does the war on drugs work? Well, I would say that it's contingent on two things. Number one, you have to define what is success. And when you have roughly between a tenth and a sixth of the prevalence rates of illicit substances, such as marijuana, the most widely used, compared to alcohol or tobacco, that is a form of success.
Oh, God, you gotta love this one. Okay, so here's his premise. Here's his premise, folks. Lots and lots of people drink. And lots of people smoke cigarettes, but very few people use illegal drugs, 1/6 to 1/10, depending on the illegal drug. Therefore, the war on drugs has been a success. Well, first of all, you can't know that because you have no control to judge it against. You really don't know what the consumption of other drugs would be if they were completely legal. We could go back historically and look back to the 18th century when cocaine and morphine, opium, laudanum, cannabis, they were all legal. And we didn't have any greater rates of use as far as I can tell. Drug addiction rates have always been around 1%, no matter how many people are using drugs. So number one, it's a baseless presumption to say that the war on drugs has kept the use of illegal drugs low. Just like it makes as much sense as me telling you that I got a rock here. It's a magic tiger rock. It keeps tigers away. Well, do you see any tigers? Looks like the rock works, doesn't it? Well, we don't know, right? You haven't tested it against anything. But the other thing that bothers me about this is that this presumption completely ignores consumer demand for drugs based on their effects. Consider, marijuana is a Schedule I substance. So are mushrooms. But far more people use marijuana than use mushrooms. They're just as illegal if you're caught with them. But far more people use marijuana than use mushrooms. They're both substances that you can manufacture in a basement with just a little bit of know-how. You can get mushroom spore kits. You can grow mushrooms. But far few people use mushrooms than use marijuana. Why is that? Because they're different. Marijuana is a nice mellow high. Mushrooms are a mind expander. And not everybody's into that. Not, and even people like me who are into that, I mean, I love my mushrooms from time to time. But it's from time to time. It's every 3 months, every 6 months or so when I need to flush out Russ's brain a little bit, right? It's not like every day like I smoke pot. These are the kind of people that it'd be like, you know, how many people eat oranges versus how many people eat durian fruit? Have you ever heard of durian fruit? D-U-R-I-A-N. It is one of the most disgusting things I've ever tasted in my life. It's a Vietnamese thing. It's a South Asian thing. It's this fruit. And apparently some people like it. But my God, it tastes and smells like some combination of kerosene and cat piss. And oh, it's just disgusting. It's just vulgar. It's not even disgusting. It's vulgar in its disgustingness. But you wouldn't, like, if durian fruit were illegal, you wouldn't say it's because it's illegal people aren't using it. You'd say it's because it sucks. It's an awful thing that very few people like. Similarly, we can look at the appetites for illegal drugs. Cocaine and methamphetamine are just as illegal. They're both Schedule II, but there's widely different numbers of people that use those. Hell, even among the legal substances, there's cigarettes and there's cigars. Far more people smoke cigarettes. Why? They're both as legal. They both contain nicotine. Well, because cigarettes and cigars taste different. And there's different convenience to them. And there's different smell to them and so forth. Same thing goes for alcohol. More people drink beer than drink Bacardi 151. They're both alcohol. They're both legal. Well, some states you can't get 151, so let's say Jack Daniels. Let's say beer and Jack Daniels. More people drink beer than drink Jack Daniels. Why? Because most people that want to get a buzz just want to drink a couple beers and get a light buzz. They're not looking to shoot a whole bunch of Jack Daniels and get fucked up. So I hate it when these drug warriors say, well, see, illegal drugs, so few people use them. Well, you don't know. And what we found from the legalization of marijuana so far is that as we've legalized marijuana, more people have chosen to use it. You'd think that would bolster his case, but all it tells us is that marijuana is a popular drug. Marijuana, mushrooms, LSD, PCP, and ecstasy are all Schedule I. They're all available in most American cities, but far more people use the pot than use the rest of those drugs. The effect of the drug matters. These are different products with different audiences and different uses and different frequencies of use. All right, let's go back to the reefer madness.
You are reducing the disease and its morbidity and its impact when you have 1/6 to 1/10 the prevalence rate among young people and adults of the use of a substance. Part of that is attributed to the fact that there are social norms against its use and law enforcement sanctions against its use, and that law enforcement can be a powerful partner in referring people into treatment and recovery. And when we decriminalize or move towards a model of deregulation and so forth, this really doesn't suffice. It doesn't answer our needs. It undermines the most effective partner for referring people to treatment. It undermines our hold on prevention, on the norms of non-using of drugs, and ultimately it weakens our approach, I believe.
All right, so the point he makes about it weakens our norms on the non-use of drugs. This is that wrong message to the children argument. This is, if we legalize, it'll send the wrong message to the children. And yet we've seen that the children aren't smoking any more pot before legalization and after legalization. It hasn't seemed to have changed their consumption patterns any. The other part that he gets to, where he keeps talking about reducing, let's go back just a couple seconds here. Catch just those few words that he had to say. Well, that's what I get for backing it up. There we go.
What is success? And when you have roughly between a 10th and a 6th of the prevalence rates of illicit substances, such as marijuana, the most widely used, compared to alcohol or tobacco, that is a form of success. You are reducing the disease and its morbidity and its impact. When you have 1/6 to 1/10 the prevalence rate among young people and adults of the use of a substance, part of that is attributed to the fact that there are social norms against its use and law enforcement sanctions against its use, and that law enforcement can be a powerful partner in referring people into treatment and recovery. And when we decriminalize or move towards a model of deregulation and so forth, this really doesn't suffice. It doesn't answer our needs. It undermines the most effective partner for referring people to treatment. It undermines our hold on prevention, on the norms of non-using of drugs, and ultimately it weakens our approach, I believe.
Now, there's the part I wanted to get to, which is it weakens the partnership between law enforcement and rehabilitation. It takes away one of our best ways of moving people into rehabilitation. Don't you love the euphemisms used here? We're talking about forced rehab when you catch someone with drugs, whether or not they have a problem with drugs or not. When we look at the science, we find that 9% of the people who ever try marijuana, ever use marijuana, develop any sort of dependence toward it. The dependence rate can go as high as 32% for tobacco, and it's in the 20s for heroin and cocaine and meth, and, you know, from 15 to 25 and so forth, right? But what that tells us is at least 3/4 of the people that use drugs don't have a dependence problem. And it's greater as you get to the caffeine and the marijuana situation. And then you look at, for those who do have a dependence problem, how severe is the dependence problem? Now, a cocaine dependence, a meth dependence, a heroin dependence can get severe enough that without it you can die, and that can motivate a desperate person to do all sorts of desperate things. Robberies and prostitution and all sorts of things. But even the most pot-addicted weed head out there is never going to get to the physical devastation that a jonesing heroin user or cocaine user is going to get, or even alcohol user for that matter. And it's not as likely to cause them to commit desperate acts. So these guys, when they want to sit on their high horse and talk about, well, we're just trying to help the poor addicts get into some rehab. Bullshit. You're trying to help the poor addict get into rehab, or else you'd be taking the guys that you catch for DUI or anything like that and forcing them into rehab too consistently. This we've seen, and I covered this on the Drug War Data Mines yesterday, that over half of the people who go to rehab for a single drug, for marijuana, It's over half that are forced there by the criminal justice system. And the criminal justice system forces them there most of the time because they caught them with marijuana. Now, we can talk about drug courts when we're catching a heroin user who is doing car break-ins to support their habit. That's a place where a drug court can say, hey, look, your heroin use has gotten to the point where you're starting to commit crimes. And rather than lock you up for those crimes, we'd like to see you get off the heroin. I'm with you on that. But when you're catching the pot smoker because he was smoking in the alley because there's no pot lounge for him to smoke in, or because pot's illegal and he's still trying to hide, depending on the state. When you catch the pot smoker and then you subject him to some sort of misdemeanor, and then you tell them that, well, hey, you can get out of your fine or you can get out of some jail time by going to rehab, then all you're doing is having a government-mandated client for a private healthcare product. You've got, you know, basically a smaller version of Obamacare, forcing people to have to pay for a private government product under the threat of punishment from the government. We'll cover some more of this Reefer Madness when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com on this beautiful Friday from Portland, Oregon.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing. So are we. Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Carson doesn't believe in the Geneva Convention.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from DanMichaelsAudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 40 after the hour, coming to you from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon. And a reminder, no Stoner Jesus show coming up at the top of the hour. Stoner Jesus having some internet problems in Stoner Heaven. It's a long connection, folks. I mean, and you know, the Christian types aren't always so good at tech, so... Oh, I'm going to get letters for that. Oh, yeah, as if I get letters. Come on now. It's internet. Back in the 20th century, we used to send paper to everybody. It was the way it was done, and by God, we liked it. All right, so let's get back to the testimony. If you just joined us, we're listening to David W. Murray. He's a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, testifying before the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. Now, it just followed up Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, who dropped bombs, man, talked about how prohibition didn't work and how we've got countries with needle exchange and harm reduction policies that we can show have worked. And this guy, he keeps going back to the well for all the reefer madness he can dig up. Let's get back to it. Listening again to David Murray testifying in Congress. I'll have my finger on the pause button to debunk most of what he has to say.
The second contingency is this. Drug policy, where it has been effective, and there are models of where it has been highly effective, reducing the youth use rates of marijuana 25% in the period from 2001 to 2008, that was an achievement. Reducing the use of major drugs, including methamphetamine and heroin during that same time period, were major achievements. And they are almost always attributable to having a bipartisan approach that crosses the aisle so that it's a unified American understanding of American lives and American risk. At the same time, you can't be, in my famous story of this that strikes me as so compelling, is Penelope on Ithaca, the wife of Ulysses, and he's sailing for 20 years, and she must marry a suitor when she finally finishes a tapestry in front of her. And when that figure in the tapestry is done, she will be forced to make a decision. But what does she do every night as she waits for Ulysses? She unravels it because she doesn't want it to come to an end. That's a positive model, but unfortunately, we've taken the worst of that. We unravel our drug policy almost every 4 or 8 years. We make gains, we have effective strategies, and then we spend the next period of time reversing ourselves. Under that model, you cannot achieve long-range, sustained goals. We need to get back to that model.
This is one of those situations where if only we kept doing the drug war consistently and for a longer period of time, by gum, then it would have worked. But doggone it, we get Republicans in like Reagan and Bush who do a good, strong drug war. And then next thing you know, you get a Clinton in there who undoes it all. And then you get a good Bush in there that does more drug war. And then you get an Obama in there that lets people legalize. And doggone it, we just don't have any success. Yeah, it's never enough time for them. Now, it only took 13 years for the United States to recognize that alcohol prohibition was a failure. But for this guy, 40 years, 45 years, 46, 46 years of drug prohibition has not been enough for him. It still could be done if we just tried harder. And did I hear this guy go off on how America is so different? We can't really look at what they're doing in Portugal or the Netherlands or any of these other countries because, well, we're different. We have a different culture. We're a different country. We're America. We're exceptional. Folks, you know what that's code for, don't you? You know when they say stuff like that. Well, we have a different culture here in America. It wouldn't work the same in America. It's a little racist dog whistling is what it is. So, well, yeah, sure, in the Netherlands, where they're all, you know, the same, if you get my drift, or Portugal, where they're all the same, you know. As if other countries don't have minorities, you know, underprivileged groups, even caste societies in some cases. Nope, America's completely different. We're the only place that has poor people and ethnic minorities. Okay, let's listen to some more of this. This is entertaining as hell.
Bipartisan approach. So what am I recommending? We have to acknowledge a couple of things. The urgency before us at the moment is opioid overdose deaths. But we can't let that drive all of our understanding. It's a relatively unique situation because we have, for opioids, methadone-assisted treatment or medication-assisted treatment of various types. We have naloxone, an overdose reversal drug. We have the capacity to do things like injection facilities. If we move in that direction, I would counsel against it.
Okay, so what's fun about this video is just off to the left frame is Ethan Nadelman, and you can see him shifting in his seat and kind of holding his hand up to his mouth like I can't rebut this guy. That's the hardest thing when you're on these testimonial panels or you're in an audience listening to this stuff in some committee room. You want to be like the guys in Animal House. Bullshit, 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 bullshit. Right? It's like, can you believe these people are saying these things, right? So he's all concerned about the opioid crisis. Oh my goodness. We got opioid overdoses. Terrible, terrible opioid overdose crisis. Terrible opioid overdose crisis. People are in pain, too much pain out there, taking too many painkillers, too many opioids. They're dying. But let's keep medical marijuana illegal. Let's keep an alternative pain relief illegal that doesn't cause overdose deaths. See, these guys, when they make their points, it's as if they're fighting all these little separate battles. There's this battle with opioids, and there's this battle with meth, and there's this battle with coke, and there's this battle with pot. And they don't see how they all affect one another. That if you continue fighting the battle on pot, it makes your battle against the opioids that much more difficult. And, of course, the thing they'll never recognize in the opioid overdose crisis is how much they, the government, have had a hand in the opioid overdose crisis. You know, these opioid painkillers, they have a quota on them. They're Schedule II drugs. And they're not the kind of thing you can just grow in your, I suppose opium. You can grow opium, but you can grow poppies. But you can't just grow an oxycodone pill is what I'm saying. You can't grow an OxyContin or a fentanyl or anything like that. They require all sorts of chemicals and all sorts of knowledge and equipment, and they're made in factories. And the government, the Office of Diversion Control from the DEA, sets the quotas on these opioid drugs. And in the medical marijuana era, the increase in production quotas for these various drugs have been anywhere from an increase of about 1,000% to an increase of 10 or 15,000%. In how much of that drug is allowed to be manufactured. And what a surprise. More mass availability of opioid products, and what do you know? We've got more opioid overdose deaths. What a surprise. So these guys that, get on their high horse about the opioid overdose crisis, you know, point a finger in the mirror there, because it has a lot to do with our government policies. Now, unaware and unsympathetic to the problem of chronic pain in America. It's far underdiagnosed and undertreated. It may not be the problem there's too much of these opioid pills. It may be a problem of how they're being distributed and how they're being controlled and who's getting a hold of them. That can be part of it. But to deny people the alternative of medical cannabis to help to relieve their pain, and actually the data we're seeing, the research we're finding, shows that there's a synergistic effect between cannabis use and opioids. That is, if you're using both, the cannabis allows you to use less of the opioid to get the pain relief. See, I'm not uncognizant of the level of pain we're talking about either. You know, weed's good for certain pain, but there's certain levels where weed's not going to touch it. You have to have those opioids for that level of pain. For those people, though, if they're using opioids in conjunction with marijuana, they need less of that opioid to deal with that high level of pain. And finally, this guy going off against recommending, I'd be against the needle, the supervised injection facilities. That's just moralism. These people that are against the supervised injection facilities are just making a moral judgment on that drug use. Just because they think needles are dirty and scary and ugly and gross, right? They're making this judgment. Now, if OxyContin were routinely adulterated and amounts of it were unknown and impure, then this would be the kind of guy that would be, you know, fighting for them to be tested and controlled. Well, that's all we're doing when we're talking about clean needles and having a supervised injection facility. It's making sure that someone who is using heroin doesn't end up infecting themselves with hep C or HIV from the needle, pass that on to other people, and then we exacerbate an opioid epidemic with a hep C epidemic or an HIV epidemic on top of it. It's all about keeping things clean. But these guys, what they worry about is that, well, if we have a supervised injection facility, all we're doing is encouraging people to shoot heroin. Dude, you don't need to encourage people on heroin to shoot heroin. They're addicted to heroin. Does the word addiction mean something to you? Do you understand the words coming out of my mouth? They're going to shoot it no matter where they're going to shoot it. They're just going to shoot it because it's heroin and they're addicted to it. Given the fact that's inevitable, how about we make sure they got a clean needle? They got a nurse on staff with some naloxone handy to take care of them if they overdose. What they're afraid of is that, well, if there's these supervised injection facilities, then there's no incentive not to quit heroin. And especially if there's naloxone, they know there's an out. That's what the governor of Maine actually was saying the other day, was that with naloxone, they know there's an automatic out to their heroin overdose, and so it wouldn't encourage them to stop. Again, do you know what addicted means? It means they're going to do it regardless. Heroin addicts right now overdose, and they know they can overdose, but they ignore that because they are addicted. Addiction does not allow for rational cost-benefit analysis. Addiction says, feed me, Seymour, and you do it. So given that that is the fact, why wouldn't we want to save a life? These guys actually think that the fear of overdosing is going to stop addicts from overdosing. And if we take that fear away from them by giving them a clean injection facility and some naloxone, why, they'll just keep on being addicted to heroin. Look, most people addicted to heroin don't want to be. Here's a newsflash for you. Most of them don't want to be, but they're caught in a cycle where they can't stop because, again, let me underline this and boldface it, they're addicted. Oh, ignorance knows no bounds. You can never go broke betting on the stupidity of the American people. And this guy, David Murray, definitely fitting the bill. We're going to take a break and then we'll close things up. Thanks for joining us. We're back in just 2 minutes.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're tuned into The Russ Belville Show. the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 56 after the hour here in beautiful Legal Potland, Oregon, and here's hoping you have a great weekend. I know there'll be folks in San Francisco attending the High Times Cannabis Cup for Northern California happening at the Cal Palace. Wish I could be there with you. I've just run out of money. I'm telling you, folks, it's not easy doing what I do. And if you're one of those out there who've been supporting me over the years, I can't give you enough thanks for your regular donations through PayPal, either through subscription or the occasional donation. I appreciate it. And I said earlier, if you were ever one of those 420 Radio VIPs and you never got your pins or stickers, please let me know. Just email me, radicalrus@gmail.com. I've gone through a lot in the past 4 years to a separation and a reconciliation and a divorce and moving out of two different houses. And there's a lot I've lost track of. So if I missed you, please forgive me and know that I do appreciate you. Just send me an email, radicalrus@gmail.com. And again, we got big surprises coming up this summer for the Russ Belville Show and the future of my writing. Can't tell you everything that's happening yet, but there's new frontiers yet to be explored, and I think it'll be a really good time. All right, so that's all the time we got for today and this week. Thanks for being here for show number 800. That's right, today is my 800th episode as a independent podcaster. So that means I've done 1,708 shows now. Maybe one of these days it'll pay. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.